Welcome back, 99.3 Nigeria Info and the Public Square, which we let you into and have your idea of the big discussions for the week. And this Friday, we have a big discussion. Like I told you earlier on, we are going to be focusing on the World Press Freedom Day, which is celebrated annually. And this happened on the 3rd of May. This year's theme is Journalism Under Digital Siege. It refers to the spying on and surveillance of the media by government. For context, we're also going to be looking at the role of the media in democracy. Our special guest is Editon Ojo, Executive Director of Media Rights Agenda. Editon has been working on press freedom and freedom of expression for well over two decades. Remember, you can engage the program on Twitter, on social media, at Public Square NG, at Rotimi Sankore, at Agogo Obo, and at Nigeria Info FM. Also, there's WhatsApp for you to talk with us. It's 0809-597-5805. Only send messages on WhatsApp. Rotimi is on break today, but you will be able to put all your questions to Editon Ojo, who's been most gracious that we can lease him for this next 2 hours. Great to have you join us, Editon Ojo. Do we have Editon Ojo there now? Hello. Try. Hello, Editon Ojo, are you there?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you loud and clear. And from the background, we can hear the cats and dogs raining at the background, right?
Yeah. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you too. All right, so before we go into the theme of this year's World Press Freedom Day, we'll look at the constitutional role of the media and why press freedom is crucial to democracy. Chapter 2, subsection 22 of the Nigerian Constitution clearly states that the press, radio, television, and other agencies of mass media shall at all times be free to uphold the responsibility and accountability of the government to the people. So, in your well-informed opinion, do you think the Nigerian press has been free to uphold accountability to government, of the government rather, to the people?
Well, I would say that in the course of our history, we've had various degrees of performance of this responsibility. Actually, that provision that you just cited has two components. One is really for the media to highlight the role of government, the responsibility of government to the people. And then the second component is holding government accountable to that responsibility. So I think that if you assess the performance of the media over the years, of course, the media is not a monolithic entity in Nigeria. There are different trends within the media. But overall, I would say that they've largely been able to play that role despite the very many challenges that the media community faces in Nigeria, ranging from the various acts of repression that journalists and media organizations have experienced to the economic challenges of the environment, as well as other factors such as the legal framework under which the media operates and the social environment.
And knowing that you've been there for a while, and I'm sure that you're very familiar with the Press Freedom Index, which coincides with the World Press Freedom Day. And the recent ranking puts Nigeria 9 places lower than where it was the year before. I know there's a lot of argument about the parameters which are used in deciding which is free or not free. But, I mean, such a damning description of how it is to work in this country, dangerous, not safe enough, corruption. A lot of those descriptions which was used in the index, the government coming hard against it, saying they disagree vehemently with that description. What are your thoughts on that, Editor?
Well, I think that it's difficult to argue against the facts. I mean, we can debate the parameters and the methodology that various organizations and institutions have used to assess the media freedom environment in Nigeria. But when you look at the bare facts, it's pretty damning, and it's difficult to contest those facts. We find that in recent years, more and more journalists in Nigeria are being killed, either because of their work or as a result of their work. And not in a single instance has there been any successful investigation into any of these killings and the perpetrators brought to justice. So what we've usually seen is a journalist is killed, there is some initial indignation, but at the end of the day, nobody's ever held accountable, which seems to send a message that it's possible for you to kill a journalist and get away with it. So it really doesn't provide any disincentive for others to try in future. But when you move away from that extreme of killings, we have so many incidents of attacks on the media in various forms. Journalists are being beaten, they're being arrested arbitrarily, locked up. Some of them, in the course of they are being locked up, they are subjected to physical or mental torture. All of these acts, and we don't see a great deal of concern from any government in power, particularly the current one, since the current one has been in power for almost 8 years. And we don't see that they've taken any decisive action to protect journalists and the media or to punish people who attack journalists or try to obstruct them from the performance of their duties. And these are facts that are incontestable. So in the face of those facts, I doubt that anyone can really argue that the media in Nigeria is free and that the environment under which the media is performing is conducive.
Interestingly, Editor Oja, I was listening and talking with senior colleague and lawyer of several years, Ayobe, and she was recounting a story about when Olusegun Obasanjo did host a former president of now Democratic Republic of Congo, but then known as Zaire, Mobutu Sese Seko, and he was complaining to Olusegun Obasanjo, at that time was a military dictator, that he was very upset about the cartoons that were running on, about the stories rather that were running on Nigerian stories about him, and he didn't think it was proper. And General Obasanjo then, brought whisked out a paper and showed him the cartoon section of a paper. And he was ridiculing him. And he was the head of state at that point in time. Just to point out that you've had, even during the military era, some level of freedom, a lot like what you had seen in several other African countries then, which had military dictatorship. But tell us what you think about the obstacles to the press in Nigeria in fulfilling its constitutional mandate.
Well, there's one, the sheer difficulty of getting information. I know that we now have a Freedom of Information Act, which is supposed to make it easier for journalists and other members of the public to obtain information from government ministries, departments, and agencies. But the reality is that the level of compliance with the provisions of the law is so poor that it's not dramatically improved the ability of the media and media professionals to obtain information from government agencies or officials. So that is a major challenge, because information is the currency that journalists deal with. And if they have difficulty in obtaining information, it's difficult for them to hold the government accountable. It's difficult for them to demonstrate to the members of the society, to the public, how well the government is performing in its duties and responsibilities when the information to make that demonstration is hard to come by. So we have that whole architecture around secrecy in government that makes it very difficult for journalists to effectively do their jobs. But beyond that, we also then have these very sometimes brutal and vicious attacks on journalists for attempting to cover events, activities, and so on. We have a lot of examples of journalists who have been beaten up, who have been arbitrarily arrested for no discernible reason, some locked up for varying periods. We have journalists who are harassed in various other ways, and as I mentioned earlier, a number of them have been killed in the course of doing their work, and nobody has been punished for any of those killings. We also have a very hostile economic environment, which makes journalists among the poorest paid professionals in the country.
If you're
working in the media sector, it really does have to be a love for journalism, a love for providing information to the society, to the public, rather than any expectation of living a comfortable life financially or materially, because the vast majority of journalists are very poorly paid. Some of them are not paid for long periods, and it's difficult to imagine how they are able to survive and continue to do that job.
And great point you make. I mean, the opportunities we have to sit together, we're appalled many times at, on the one hand, trying to find justice for the people, meanwhile, in the newsrooms, it's a different ballgame entirely when the Justice Five even eludes them. But, Editor, why do you think press freedom is crucial to democracy? And if we flip the coin also to what happens to democracy without press freedom?
Press freedom is absolutely crucial to democracy. Without it, you cannot really have a democracy for many different reasons. One, people need to be informed in a democracy. They need to have information about who to elect into office, what is the track record of performance, and when they get into office, what are their policies, how are they implementing these policies, and so on. But the media itself also provides the platform where members of the public participate in governance, are able to air their views and opinions on all the issues that government is dealing with, able to express their approval of the government's performance or disapproval of the government's performance. And in the absence of press freedom, it's difficult for the media to provide this reflection in an honest and accurate manner, because the output is frequently manipulated. There is an effort to present a picture that may not be true, may not be real, may not be complete, and so on. So that then tends to mislead people. Whilst you find a lot of government officials in a very propagandistic manner, suggesting that everything is going well, that they are doing a great job, the reality may be very different. So it's important that the media is free to present an honest picture. But when you look at our context in Nigeria specifically, where you also have a constitutional mandate which imposes an obligation on the media to hold the government accountable. So it's not just a question of providing a platform for public debate or informing the people, but also helping to show that they're doing what they're supposed to do or failing to do what they're supposed to do, and enlightening people about what it is that government exists for, what is the function of government, and is it playing that role? Is it performing its functions? Is it doing well? All of these will only be possible in an environment where freedom and independence for the media exist. But we've had a history, both from the time of military rule right up to this time when we've had civil democratic rule, of government trying to control the information that the media puts out in many different ways. Some are more subtle than others. Some are really quite brutal in their efforts to suppress the truth and prevent accurate reporting of the reality. So without that kind of freedom that enables us to have trust for what we are getting through the media, it's really difficult to have an effective democratic system of governance, because information is really at the heart of that. And the media, it's the place where that is most prominent.
So real. In case you just joined us in the public square this evening, we have exclusive privilege of having Editor Joe, Executive Director of Media Rights Agenda, and he's been working on press freedom and freedom of expression for well over two decades. And the World Press Freedom Day, which happened on the 3rd of May, which was Tuesday, is the center of our discussions this evening in the square, and we'll open the square at some point also too, so that we can get you in, and the editor will be in to take all your questions. He's the expert today. Wrote to me, unfortunately, cannot join in. He's got some things to deal with. The significance of this year's World Press Freedom Day is next, editor. Journalism under digital siege. Why would you say this is significant, first and foremost?
Sorry, I didn't catch the question.
Great. So I said the theme for this year's was journalism under digital siege, and I just wanted to find out how significant this theme is to us in today's world.
It's really very significant. We've had these huge advancements in technology and communication technology specifically, which means that the capacity to gather information and disseminate information has exponentially increased. However, that has not been all good. What we've seen also is the use of digital technology, of communication technology, to also try and repress the media, to violate media rights and freedoms in different ways. Particularly of focus in the theme of this year's World Press Freedom Day is the effort by governments and non-state actors, which could include private companies, criminal groups, and other powerful interests in society, to use surveillance to monitor journalists, to know who they are having conversations with, who their sources of information are, what they are planning to write, and so on and so forth.
Right.
So digital surveillance has become something that is a huge concern in this digital era, because virtually any piece of technology, whether it's a mobile phone, a computer, and so on, can be used to invade the privacy of journalists, and are frequently used. So a number of countries are producing surveillance technologies. Those countries like Nigeria, which are not producing, are purchasing them from countries which are producing. And these technologies are being used to violate the privacy rights of citizens, but very often of journalists, because of the interest that many governments have in knowing in advance what journalists are going to publish or broadcast before they are aired, so that they can try and prevent them. So the surveillance of journalists and media organizations has really reached epidemic proportions in today's digital world, which is why that particular focus and that theme of journalism under digital siege. And I think for those of you who are practitioners, you can feel it, although very often, because of the sophistication of the technologies, a lot of people may not be aware that they are even under surveillance and that their communication is being monitored. So I think it's both appropriate and very significant.
Very, very significant indeed, editor. We're going to delve a lot into this. I'm sure a lot of people are hearing for the first time these things you're saying, but I remember when I did hear, and I thought about how strange it was that the government was buying spying apps and devices to to poke noses into what the journalists were doing. And a lot of people thought it was really funny then, but something for us to really think about as we head towards general elections. And to think about how the temperature has risen from what it was in 2016. I remember 2015, rather, in the run-up to that election, how social media became such a massive influence in what was going to happen. And here we are now talking about how this monster, which could not be managed and curbed at that time, the opportunities lost, and now we're going to deal with this sort of way of curbing the media. Don't forget, the public square still here. We're going to go on a quick break. And we come back, Editor Oje, Executive Director, Media Rights Agency, still be with us. And then we will also have the opportunity to interact with you. But we can, Editor, so we'll be with you back in a short while.
Okay, thank you. Your voice is a bit low. I don't know whether the mic is far from you, but...
Okay, so, yes, we'll make it clearer for you, definitely.
Okay.
Welcome back. It's 27 minutes to 5 on 99.3 Nigeria Info. I am Aogo Obo, and together with Editor Ojo, Executive Director, Media Rights Agency, we have... Media Rights Agenda. We have a big discussion we're having around the World Press Freedom Day, which was marked on Tuesday. It's been done every year. This year's theme is what we're looking at before we went on the break, journalism under digital siege, which is referring to spying and on and surveillance of the media by government, which Editor had been talking to us about before we went on that break. The WhatsApp number is active, those of you asking me. It's 0809-597-5805. Again, 0809-597-5805. So in case you have the opportunity, send the messages in there. When I open the square to the calls and the messages, I can then have those messages read to a resource person here, Editor. Editor, are you still there?
I am here.
Brilliant. And I'm sure that... we're having an intriguing time. We rarely have the opportunity to have you this close. So now we have you, we may as well milk everything from you. So thank you very much again for being most gracious. I was telling someone just a short while ago how times have changed. Back in the day, I remember going to cover a judicial matter. And, you know, the rule is you don't take shots. You don't take or capture footage while the court is in process.
Yeah.
So we were outside waiting for them to step out to take our shots, and the policeman walked up to us and said, "I'm sorry, gentlemen of the press, you are not going to be able to take any of the shots here." I said, "Well, I understand when I'm inside the court, we won't be able to do that, but outside the court is public space and we will go ahead." He said, "You won't." I said, "Well, you're doing your job, allow me to do my job. When the suspects emerge, I'll be doing my job, and don't try to interrupt me." And it was interesting when they stepped out and he stepped in front of the camera, and I moved him aside and he cocked his gun and I said, "Go ahead and shoot." I told the cameraman, "Go ahead and shoot. We have more work to do here." And he looked at us bemused, you know. But the intimidation has moved from the physical space, it appears, to the digital space, which is the point I was trying to make. What do you think in terms of the digital siege which we've built a nest on now? On what would you say if you were asked this digital siege, how does it impact on the key pillars of press freedom, such as sources and whistleblowers?
Well, in today's digital age, I think for most people, life has really moved online into the digital sphere, which then means that every component of their lives is potentially exposed to those who would be doing surveillance of their communication.
Mm.
And in the context of media, that really cuts across the entire process of information gathering, processing the information, disseminating the information, and so on. Everything is now happening online, digitally, and so on. So really, that creates a lot of exposure for media practitioners, because even as you're doing interviews with your sources, it's quite possible that people are listening in, and if those are whistleblowers or confidential sources that really need their identities protected, they are potentially exposed and liable to all kinds of dangerous reprisals for the information that they are disclosing to you as a reporter. So that exposes them and could constitute a major impediment to the ability of journalists, of reporters, to get information from their sources, especially confidential sources. But we've also found situations where government officials, government agencies, security sector operators are attacking media sites. So those media that are operating online, they get attacked, so their platforms are inaccessible, or they are infected with viruses or other malware. So there are just a whole range of attacks that have come with the digital era that makes, I think perhaps one might even argue that it's even more invasive than what we used to experience in the analog age, which was the time when I really practiced journalism. I mean, the dangers were different. They were physical. They were worldly dangers, but now they're really all around us in the digital sphere.
Indeed, and it's great to see the perspectives, how they've moved and revolved over time. What would you say in terms of legal protections which are in place or should be in place to protect sources such as whistleblowers, since they're very key to where we are as a nation right now?
Well, unfortunately, the reality is that the law is often struggling to catch up with technology, even in the best environments where there is an intention to genuinely protect.
Right.
The technology is far ahead of the law. So that has been the race that legal provisions have had in the technological era. But when you look at environments such as ours, where you don't see a high degree of motivation to protect people, then, you know, the legal protections are almost completely absent. So when you talk about protection of whistleblowers, for instance, we don't have any legal protection for whistleblowers. The only policy that the government has developed and is operating around whistleblowers has really been for the purpose of recovering stolen assets and providing some incentive for whistleblowers in that context who blow the whistle on assets that have been stolen, and then a certain percentage is given to them. But for those who are blowing the whistle for the public good, there's no protection whatsoever. We don't have protection for confidential sources of journalists. We don't have any data protection law. The best that NIDA has come up with is the Nigeria Data Protection Regulations 2019.
Right.
It's not a law. It's a regulation which has been developed by an agency. But implementation is so poor that it's almost non-existent. So we really don't have legal protections against all of the malicious activities that are taking place in the digital environment. So that makes the situation a lot more precarious for journalists. But what is worse is that the government has, since 2015, passed a Cybercrime Act, which includes contains many funny provisions that you really wonder what is the intention. Now, on the face of it, none of us can argue against the need to have cyber crimes to use against cyber criminals.
Right.
Unfortunately, when you look at a lot of the cases that have been taken to court under the Cyber Crimes Act,
right,
there are against journalists, against bloggers, against people who are expressing themselves online, and that law is being used to harm them and intimidate them and silence them. So the legitimacy of a cyber crime law is being undermined in such a context where it's merely being used to silence critics of government or people who are reporting negative things about government.
And this is I can imagine portends some grave danger for a democracy like Nigeria, where you don't have that sort of opportunity to express yourself as often as you will. What would you have preferred in terms of legislation? Because I did read the statement from the Nigeria Guild of Editors, where they were concerned that if this democracy in which you had everyone come together, especially the rights activists and the journalists, to frame it, and then at the end of the day, those who have been beneficiaries of the democratic system have now turned around and used legislation as a way to call the media. Well, what are the ramifications it does portend for us?
We don't really need to look far to see examples of how countries are trying to protect the media. I mean, Ghana, that we call our younger brother here,
right,
is an example of a country where you have extensive constitutional provisions for press freedom, media freedom, and that has made it possible for the Ghanaian media to thrive. So that is an example that Nigeria should be emulating. In Ghana also, they have abolished criminal defamation and other penal sanctions for journalistic activities or activities around communication. But we're holding up onto all of these and worsening the legal environment. So when you ask, what would I have preferred?
Right.
I think we should have express protection for media freedom in the Constitution as well as in various laws. We should specifically have a data protection law, which means that the privacy of my communication, of my data, in the hands of government agencies or other entities, is secure, is protected. We do understand that there is a need to gather people's personal information and data for a variety of reasons. But in the absence of any data protection legislation, what it means is that much of this data is being stolen at worst, but also we have careless handling of people's personal information and data, which exposes them to all kinds of dangers, and there's just nothing anyone can do about it because there is no legal recourse. We also should be talking about protection of confidential sources of journalists, because in many democratic societies, it is recognized that they play a crucial role in ensuring that the media is able to do its work effectively, which is for the benefit of the wider society. So sources for journalists are adequately protected. So are whistleblowers who disclose wrongdoing, either to the media or to regulatory agencies and so on. We don't have all of these protections in place. Rather, what we have very often is that when people report things that are factual but impact negatively on powerful people, whether in and out of government,
right,
the government comes after them. Government machineries used to go after them. So I think we have our priorities sort of upside down in that regard.
Don't forget, if you have any questions, if you've got any comments you want to contribute, you can do that first via WhatsApp, and then we'll open the phone lines after we come back at 5 for the break. We have Editor Ojo, Executive Director, Media Rights Agenda, and he's worked on this for a number of years, and perhaps is in the best position to answer a lot of questions, especially around the country's media space. Frank writes in from Agua Palace. He says, we can only have a free press in Nigeria if the NBC, which is the Broadcasting Commission, becomes an independent body. Well, what do you think in terms of how we've been able to evolve as a democracy, regulatory bodies? Can they be independent, really?
Oh, they can be independent. And again, we have examples of regulatory bodies. It's not just examples. I mean, international legal frameworks certainly require that any regulatory body, anybody that regulates media or telecommunication,
right,
should be independent of political control and interference. It's only in that way that we can have regulation that is not motivated by political interest. Mm. Fortunately, in our case, I think it's clear to everyone that the National Broadcasting Commission is not independent. Mm. But the provision in the enabling law, which states very expressly that the Minister of Information is authorized to give the commission directives of any nature, and that the commission is obliged to comply. Mm. I mean, it's clear evidence that there is no intention even for it to be independent.
Mm.
So when you look at that alongside the way that members of the commission are appointed, the manner in which the chief executive of the commission has been removed over the years, time and time again, once they do something that displeases the government or the Minister of Information, they are ceremoniously removed from office, is clearly lacking in independence. And that puts the entire broadcast sector at risk, because it's very easy to then put pressure on the Broadcasting Commission to punish or sanction any broadcast media outlet that airs anything that the government is displeased with. That is the danger of having a regulatory body for the broadcast media that is not independent.
And these are on the ongoing conversations we must have if we are to build a democratic system which is sustainable.
Absolutely.
Great. So keep sending the comment. Let's see what we have before we go on that break. I'm sure a lot of you have questions you probably want Editor Joe to deal with before he tells us bye-bye. But if we could build a... If we could build a tent in the studio, we'll keep him here for as long as we want. Tony from Birmingham in Alabama writes that good governments the world over work in concert with the free media to keep their citizens in the know about policies, while bad governments see the press as their number one enemies. He goes on to write that... All right, this is for an earlier topic, and on he goes. But just before I go on that break, what would you say in terms of this cat and mouse game between the, you know, we have to explain over and over again that the media is never ever in bed with the government. They have to hold the government accountable. So you think it's an off question when people say, why can't the media work with the government? I've heard elected public officers say that.
It's a misunderstanding of the role of the media, and I really struggle to understand why that misunderstanding exists, because the Section 22 of the Constitution, which you cited earlier, is very clear the role of the media. It's not really to work with the government. It's to uphold the responsibility and accountability of the government to the people.
Right.
You can't do that if you are holding hands and... singing Kumbaya together. That is not the intention of the Constitution. That is not the role of the media. The role of the media is to shine the light on government and its activities, to keep it honest, to make sure that it is fulfilling its obligation and its responsibility to the people. And the same Constitution says in the same Chapter 2 that the security and welfare of the people shall be the primary purpose of government. The media then has to ensure that that remains the primary purpose of government. And when government deviates from its primary purpose, it's the responsibility of the media to highlight that, to point it out, and to pressure the government to toe the line of constitutionalism and what it is supposed to be doing.
Couldn't have been said better. We'll go on a break, Editor Joe, but when we come back from that break, at least enough time to get... some hot coffee, is the questions around investigative journalism, which someone is asking. I'm sure people. He's saying that he thinks the democratic system, this is the same Tony from Alabama, is weak because the investigative journalism is weak and is lacking. What are the inhibiting factors and why investigative journalism doesn't have the muscles you would require to hold people accountable in the country? All right, we'll go on the quick break. Editor Ojo, thank you very much. You're still with us. You're not going anywhere yet. Those of you who want to join the conversation, remember that we're on social media at Nigeria Info FM. On WhatsApp, 0809-597-5805. Again, 0809-597-5805. And then when we come back, I'd open the phone line so that Editor Ojo can get a little bit of our goodwill from the listening public. 99.3 Nigeria Info, we will be right back. All right, welcome back. It's 2 minutes past five, well, 3 minutes past five now, and we have gone 50%. If you just joined in, you've missed quite a lot, but I hope you can catch up as quickly as possible before we end this show. You're on your number one talk news and sports station, 99.3 Nigeria Info. I'm Awogo Obo, and we have still the special honor and privilege to have Editor Ojo with us, Executive Director, Media Rights Agenda. And we've been talking about the Journalism Under Digital Siege is the platform, the canvas for this year's World Press Freedom Day, which is marked every 3rd of May annually. And this year's theme, Journalism Under Siege, and which is referring to spying on and surveillance of the media by government. And we're going to open the phone line straight away. And on WhatsApp, first, 0809-597-5805. Again, 0809-597-5805. And the number to call, 0700-993-993-993. Again, 0700-993-993-993. And then for the female callers, you can also call us with this number, 01465-7190. Again, 01465-7190. Editor, are you ready for us?
Yes, I am.
All right. The rest of Lagos and outside Lagos, he's ready for you and we're set to go. So let's see who will be our first caller here. Hello and good evening.
Hello.
Yeah, kindly turn down the device you're listening with so that we don't get the feedback.
Hello.
Hello. Your name, please, and where you're calling from.
My name is Jubilee Okoye. I'm calling from Surulere.
All right, Jubilee, please go ahead.
Please, I want to ask a question. Journalists, are there a government agent or a people agent?
A journalist, a government agent, or a people agent? Is that the question you're asking?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Interesting question. So, Editor, so maybe we go like five, and then I get your reaction so that because quite a number of calls coming in, and we can take the ones which need responses, and those which don't, we can toss out the window. But let's go on. Hello and good evening.
Yeah, good evening once again.
Great to have you join us. What's your name, please, and where you calling from?
Alabalakwe is my name.
Alabalakwe, please go ahead.
Yes. Oh, I want to. I greet your guests. Oh,
right.
I want to appeal to your girls. Are you guys going to do it by giving training and retraining, especially for those new entrants in journalism? Journalism is a fine and clean job. You know, I always categorize journalism or journalists as a door. You know, door is one that will see what is going on outside and as well see what is going on inside. You are in between. But today's journalists, how are you guys going to do it so that you give them good training and retraining so that the brand envelope will not be the one superseding the real job in there? That is my question. Good afternoon, and I salute you guys once again.
Thank you very much, Alabalakwe. So let me see if I can get in two more questions, and then we can go back to Editor Ojo. All right, let's take these ones first because they're being screened. So the one question, government, journalist, government agents or people agents. Interesting, right?
So Journalists act on behalf of the people. So they are the eyes and the ears of people. They get information from various sources, gather information, and disseminate information to the people. So in that respect, I would say that journalists act more as agents of the people. Of course, government officials are also citizens, members of the society, and they also get information from the media. But the media does not exist to act on behalf of government, but rather to act on behalf of the people. So even though it's a somewhat strange question, I would say that they are agents and representatives of the people.
Excellent. Agents and representatives of the people. There's a question asked around training for the next generation of journalists, or today's journalists, in maintaining standards. So I think Alaba Lakwe asked that question.
So we have a lot of journalism training institutions in Nigeria, polytechnics, universities, and other tertiary institutions. I think that the problem with some of them is that the training that they give is very theoretical, and many journalists actually get to practice when they have left training and they get employed. And a lot of employers do not have the patience to start providing that practical training. But I think that it's an important point, because the profession, as well as the means to practice it, is constantly evolving and changing. So training and retraining is critical. But I would also say that the wider society has a role to play, because if we don't support the media sector and the media industry, they're not going to be able to play the role that we expect them to play, because it's expensive to run media organizations. It's expensive to gather information. Journalists have to travel all over the place to gather information. This is expensive. And if we are not willing to pay for the product or to support the media sector, then we're going to be getting substandard products, as with everything else. So I think that it's important for the society to recognize its role also, because if the media is providing you with the information that you need to be a full member of the community or of the society, then you should also be willing to give something back. So, yes, training and retraining is important. Employers should try and provide that along with other stakeholders, but society has a role to play as well.
Absolutely. I think one of the callers, I think it was Alaba Lakwe also, who made the reference to checkbook journalism, what he called a brown envelope. you want to say something about that?
Yes. Well, unfortunately, like every sector of the society, we also see some level of corruption in the media. I think it's a bit unfair to paint everybody with that black brush, because whilst there may be those who are corrupt, a lot of journalists are practicing ethically and in accordance with the ethics of the profession. Again, I come back to my other point, that where the media is not able to pay the professionals, then you expose them to such temptation, because I mean, people have bills to pay, and they're working and they're not getting paid, and then they have this opportunity always to meet with these people who have more money than what know what to do with it. The temptation can be overwhelming. So again, society has a duty to support the media sector, the media industry, so that they can also pay the professionals who work in those companies, and therefore expose them to less temptation.
Right. Baba Odu, I'm still on WhatsApp. Lest we be accused of sectionalism or marginalization, I'll take about the third one here on WhatsApp before we get back to the phone lines. Edaton here. But this is from Baba Odu. He's in Ogun State and says that he's interested in investigative journalism. It brings in an earlier point about what to do with investigative journalism as a fledgling democracy.
So investigative journalism really presents the best opportunity for the media to play that role of holding the government accountable. Because much of the information that is required to do that is not information that government officials or institutions are willing to disclose voluntarily. So there needs to be a lot of extra effort put into exposing that information, collecting that information and disseminating it. So that comes with a lot of challenges. One, as I said earlier, it's expensive to do investigative journalism, especially when you need to do a lot of traveling and other expenses that go with it. But it's also quite dangerous because some of the people who want to hide this information at all costs and are willing to kill to hide the information. And in many cases, we find that when journalists reveal those kinds of sensitive information, government is very quick to arrest them and lock them up. So those are some of the challenges that are affecting the extent to which investigative journalism is being practiced. And I come back to my principal point that society also has a role to play because all of these are in service of society.
Right.
But when journalists run into problems, we don't see society rising up in support of journalists or in defense of the journalists. We should be able to see people coming out on the streets to protest because a journalist has been arrested or in some other way harmed. But very often the media professionals are on their own when they run into problems in the course of doing their jobs. And I think that that would provide a lot of disincentive for people to go the extra mile.
Right. A great point you make. We have the media professionals must come together because an injury to one, it's an injury to all. And I definitely agree with you on that one. We're going to go back to the phone lines and hear what the rest of the people have to say. All right. Sorry about that. Do call back. 0700-993-993-993. Again, 0700-993-993-993. Hello and good evening.
Evening once again.
Great to have you join us. What's your name, please, and you're calling from?
My name is
Say that again, please.
Ambrose.
All right, Ambrose.
I'm blowing you today, interestingly.
It's your lucky day. You can go play the lottery after today. Maybe you'll be more fortunate.
I just decided to follow you today. I want to add, based on what your guest has said.
Right.
He said that journalists, three being arrested and all of that. And I observed that even the journalists, they don't support themselves. Sometimes, maybe because some of them are working with government agencies, you know, when there are issues, you also see them taking sides, you know, rather than, you know, playing the role of the media, which is the fourth state of the race. And I feel that journalists should be able to stand on the side of truth. If any one of them is being arrested, it will not be okay for all of them to speak with one voice before the people can support them. And I want to ask, is there anything wrong if all the journalists put together can also source for a presidential candidate? Not from these two major political parties,
right,
but from one of the minors.
Right.
Because for me,
right,
any candidate from any of these two major political parties,
right,
no matter how credible and good the person is,
right,
it's a no-no for me.
All right.
So I am asking now, can't these journalists even rescue us from this total mess that we have found ourselves?
All right, Ambrose, thank you very much. And like you know, in Nigeria Info, on our road to 2023, which we have in the morning, Crossfire and Hatfact, all party aspirants who have signified their interest and want to come to talk have all come, whether they're irrespective of what party they belong to. So I hope that will answer your question. Maybe Editor can expand more on that. But let's take this next call. All right, don't have that one yet. But it's such a big thing, Editor Joe, the next elections coming in and the role of the media. I mean, I've been in countries where I've seen journalists get partisan, you know, in deciding who they will support. And I thought that was really strange. We don't have that culture here, but what are your thoughts?
Well, I didn't hear all of his comments or question, but just responding to the bit that I heard from you, I don't think that it's appropriate for journalists to be partisan because that then puts into question their objectivity in providing us with a fair picture of all of the political parties and contestants in an election. If they are supporting one or the other. So I think that the lack of partisanship would make it easier for the society to have a greater trust in what they are getting through the media and to be able to then make their choice based on the information that they get through the media. But obviously, media practitioners are also members of the society, often citizens of the country, and therefore they have a right to also participate in the political process. But from my perspective, that should be limited to their right to vote in an election, which is done privately and secretly, should not be trying to canvass votes or convince the wider society to vote for a candidate that they support beyond providing us what their track record and record of performance has been.
And talking about their right to vote, it's a huge number of journalists who play the role of covering the elections or have to carry out observer duties on election day. And someone pointed out to me that you have over a million, if possible, who do not vote on election day because of the responsibilities. I mean, what are your thoughts on this one?
Well, it's a challenge that a lot of countries face. And in some countries, journalists are allowed to vote in advance of election day. So there is advance voting that takes place for citizens that play critical roles in society on election day.
I saw that in Ghana when I was there.
And media practitioners are usually part of that group.
Yeah.
But we don't seem to have any arrangement that takes care of these kinds of people. So a lot of journalists, perhaps most journalists, are not able to vote in elections as a result. And therefore, they are deprived of their civic rights as citizens.
So someone on WhatsApp is drawing you to an earlier point you made about investigative journalists. Comrade Akpan Silas, writing from Magodo, he says that what is the sure guarantee for safety and protection of investigative journalists? The case study of late Dele Giwa is a case in point.
That is one of the obligations that any government has, to protect journalists and to ensure their safety. Now, if you look at the major instrument on this on the African continent, it's the Declaration of Principles of Freedom of Expression and Access to Information in Africa.
Right.
Principle 20 of that sets out the duties and obligations of government with respect to safety of journalists.
Right.
The government should ensure that journalists are protected, but whenever they come under attack, such attacks should be thoroughly investigated and the perpetrators should be brought to justice, and the victims or their families, in the case where journalists are killed, should have access to effective remedies. All of these are things that we're not implementing. There does not seem to be a deliberate effort or framework in place by the government of Nigeria or in the different states to protect journalists who are obviously doing a job that can be frequently dangerous. In the cases where journalists have been attacked that we know, there's been no credible investigation. There's been no serious investigation. And we don't know any case where anybody has been prosecuted and brought to justice for attacking a journalist. Not one single case that you can say there's been full prosecution of anybody for attacking a journalist. So, as I said earlier, the result of that is that people are not afraid to attack journalists because they feel that there will be no negative consequences for them.
Right. No negative consequences for that. In case you just joined in, the voice you've been hearing is Editor Ojo, who is Executive Director, Media Rights Agenda. And it's our focus today on Public Square as we also observe the World Press Freedom Day, which happened on the 3rd of this month, which is Tuesday, by the way. Back to the phone lines. Hello and good evening.
Hello.
Great to have you join us. Your name, please, and where you're calling from.
Okay, my name is Anthony. I'm calling from Ikeja.
All right, Anthony, go ahead, please.
Okay, I just want to respond to some things that I've heard. Somebody asked a question earlier that is journalism or journalists or journalists, are they meant for the masses or meant for the government?
Hmm.
Your guest responded in a very diplomatic and political manner. I also want to add to what the earlier caller said.
Hmm.
Can your guest tell me the journalists or all the journalists in NTA, those government-owned stations, would they say they are serving, they are for the masses or they are for their paymasters?
Right.
I just need an answer to this question I just asked, because there are some things that I have. If you listen to some of us...
All right, Anthony, before you begin to answer the question you've asked, let Editon respond. Interestingly, just before he asked that question, I was going to ask you the same question. It appears that... It's a question which is you have a lot on the WhatsApp platform too. This dilemma. We have colleagues who work in state media, and they have to play their role too. How do you respond to that?
The problem we have with that issue is that we have a distortion of state media.
Hmm.
Now, those media that we call government-owned media, ideally are supposed to be public service media.
Hmm.
They may be funded through public funds, but they are supposed to be serving the interest of society.
Hmm.
Now, that whole arrangement has been bastardized by our government, and they've turned those media into government mouthpieces and make it difficult for those working in them to be able to report independently. But if you look around the world, you would see a number of public service media. Perhaps the most well-known one is the BBC,
right,
which is funded through public purse. It's publicly owned. But the government of the UK complains as much as citizens about how critically the BBC is reporting on its activities.
Right.
And there's nothing it can do.
Right.
So we, as members of our society, also have to participate in a policy process of pushing our public media to be true public service media, rather than this attitude of just leaving it to government to use them as government megaphones. But we've also seen a few examples of courageous journalists working in publicly owned media,
right,
that are nonetheless trying to report independently. But as I said earlier, when they also run into problems, where is society to support them? Because we are quick to criticize when they knuckle under the influence or pressure of government. But when they stand firm and they run into problems, we should also be quick to defend them and support them. That is the only way we can encourage more and more journalists, regardless of whether they're working for government-owned media, to serve the public interest, to play the role of public service media.
We're going to expatiate a little more on this, because I know it's such a big thing, with Editor Ojo, once we come back from this break on 99.3 Nigeria Info. It's the Public Square, and the square is open for you to have your say. And that's exactly what we've been doing in the last 25, 26 minutes or thereabout. 99.3 Nigeria Info, let's talk.